and gentlemen, our next panel discussion is one which I think is going to evoke quite a lot of debate and discussion, so let's make ample time for that. The topic, of course, is consumer education, a national necessity or an unnecessary irritation. I think already the way that it's formulated gives us an indication that this is going to be one of those topics that we want to hear a bit more about. To moderate this, we have the director of ICAP, Jeff Van Rooyen. So without further ado, over to him.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much, Joanne. We have a bit of a dilemma because today we're having this panel immediately after lunch. It's also the last panel discussion on the last day, and it also comes after a terrific function that we had, you know, last night. So I have some idea how you're feeling this afternoon, but I would like to give you the assurance that in discussion with the panelists, we have said that we're going to run a very efficient process this afternoon. So I can certainly see the finish. And normally when you see the finish, you know, you have a surge of energy, you have an adrenaline rush. And so if you could just bear with us, we will definitely get you to the finish. Let me start off, first of all, by introducing the panelists. And with their permission and in the interest of time, we will not be going through the detailed resumes. They're in the book. So we have, and I'm going to, in the order of the presentations that we're going to be having this afternoon, we have Kuno Wang, who is the chairman of the International Forum for Investor Education. And then we have Gerard Limos, who is the chairman of the Consumer Financial Education Body. Third over there, we have Flo N. Messi, who is the principal administrator for the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Then we have Jaffet Kato, who is the Chief Executive Capital Markets Authority of Uganda. And then last but not least, we have Maria Helena Santana, who is in fact the chairperson of the Securities and Exchange Commission of Brazil. And she's also the chairman-elect of AOSCO. And may I take the opportunity, Maria, to congratulate you, you know, on your appointment. So what I would like to do is to just set the scene for the discussion that we're going to have this afternoon. In the aftermath of the financial crisis, and I mean we've spoken about it at length, you know, over the 2 days, there's no question about the fact that investors have been hit very hard. Our Minister of Finance, Pravin Gordhan, told us yesterday that some 30 to 40 million people around the world, you know, lost their jobs. We also know that in addition to that calamity, very many of those investors, you know, also lost life savings. So in some respects, it was a double whammy for investors, and I think it was a very tragic event indeed. The Minister of Finance yesterday also spoke about the fact that, about the multipolarity, you know, of the world today. And when we talk about investor education, it will become very clear from the presentations, you know, from the panelists, that we are truly living in a multipolar, you know, society. The fundamental question that we're asking today around investor education is whether or not investor education is a national necessity or an unnecessary irritation. And it will be interesting to get the perspectives, you know, of the panelists. Some of the issues that we flagged, and those issues are in the book, so I'm not going to deal with all of them, but I just want to mention like two or three. There is the, you know, the complexity of financial products and services facing investors today, the lack of information, knowledge, and skills, the fact that investors have the right, you know, to protection, but the other side of the coin is that they also have a personal responsibility for the financial decisions, you know, that they take. So in the book, you would have noted that there are 8 very specific questions that we've asked our panelists to consider. I'm not going to read those questions, but they're very profound and very well-considered questions. And without much ado, I'm now going to hand over to the panelists, and I certainly hope that in their presentations that they will give us some, you know, some answers to those very profound questions. So with that, Chairman Wang, if I can then hand over to you for your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is a great honor to speak at this panel discussion at the 36th IOSCO Annual Conference held in the beautiful and historic city of Cape Town, South Africa. Before talking about consumer education in the financial sector, I'd like to briefly introduce the International Forum for Investor Education, IFIE. The IFIE was formed in 2005 among the member countries of the Council for Securities Association as a unique alliance that brings together private and public sector investor education providers. The main objective of IFIE is to improve global investor education standards. To achieve this objective, IFIE serves as a clearinghouse for the exchange of information among education providers from different jurisdictions. IFIE and IOSCO host joint global investor education conferences on a regular basis to promote exchange of investor education information. I believe nobody would dispute the value of financial education, especially in the wake of the recent global financial crisis. Financial education is increasingly emphasized worldwide. A number of factors highlight the importance of financial education. They include changes in the global financial environment, such as the introduction of sophisticated products and the rises in financial fraud and other crimes. We should also add to this list growing information asymmetry, increasing life expectancy, and aging society. Faced with increased choices and risks in the free market, consumer needs financial education to make rational decisions. This is particularly true the case because not every financial product can be properly regulated. Financial education is one of the most effective tools to improve the financial literacy of individuals. From a micro perspective, financial education is beneficial to individual welfare. From a macro perspective, it ultimately contributes to the development of the market and economy. Despite the increased importance of financial education, however, financial education has not been as active as desired. I believe there are three major challenges in expanding financial education. First, financial education involves high cost. Specifically, it costs to develop and continuously deliver education program that can meet the needs of various group of people. Second, any given education program will affect people differently. It is difficult to know when and how the effect of education programs will materialize. Third, the evaluation of the consumer education is a challenging task. It's never easy to evaluate how cost-effectively education programs achieve their goals. I think these issues are why consumer education is sometimes called into question. Nevertheless, I think we should not let these challenges prevent us from promoting consumer financial education. To provide financial education efficiently, we need to set up a national strategy. The national strategy helps to maintain the consistency of education policy and coordinate various education providers. However, it is practically impossible to put consumer education solely under the control of the government and public regulators, which involves taxes. And the school system alone is not enough to fully take care of consumer education for adults. In addition, the government is unlikely to meet the diverse needs of consumers in today's rapidly changing market environment. Therefore, the government and public authorities should focus on establishing an education infrastructure and creating national education strategies. In this sense, self-regulatory organizations, SROs, may be in an appropriate position to take on the responsibility of investor education. There are some merits to this approach. First, education funding would not just be covered by taxpayers, but by the industry. Second, SROs are better positioned to respond to the rapidly changing financial market environment in a swift and flexible manner. This means they are more capable of providing financial education that can meet the specific needs of different target groups. As beneficiary of the financial market, listed issuers and institutional investors should actively engage in consumer education. Listed companies are responsible for providing transparent corporate disclosures, which will help consumers make informed financial decisions. Institutional investors should identify what information is necessary for their customers through the Know Your Customer system. And they should provide their customers with sufficient information on the structure and risks of financial investment products. The financial institution should also make sure the information is provided in an easy-to-understand manner. As part of the initiative for increased corporate social responsibility, these businesses can provide and finance education programs. International cooperation is also essential for the development of consumer education. Specifically, it is important to promote the exchange of information on education programs and policies among countries. IFIE aims to meet these needs by serving as a forum for investor education provider worldwide. As I mentioned earlier, IFIE and IOSCA regularly host joint global conferences to promote investor education. IOSCA also published reports on investor education contributing to the development of global investor education. I believe one of IOSCA's important roles should be providing guidance for countries that want to set up national consumer education strategies. In this regard, I hope IOSCA will work to facilitate global cooperation among national regulators for the development of consumer education. I also expect IOSCA will remain committed to the development of financial education policy in collaboration with education-related international organizations. As I mentioned earlier, SROs are important in investor education, but they don't have strong enforcement means. I suppose this is particularly true for developing countries. In this sense, IOSCA can play a critical role in maximizing the effectiveness of SROs' education programs by helping to ensure the education is properly enforced. As chair of IFIE, I will work to strengthen our cooperative ties with IOSCA so that IFIE may grow to become IOSCA's key policy partner for investor education. And I welcome further discussion with IOSCA on this initiative. Ladies and gentlemen, we cannot overemphasize the importance of consumer education in the capital market. It is a fundamental aspect of capital market development, as it directly involves building market confidence. Once you lose market confidence, it takes a great deal of effort to gain it back. In today's rapidly changing financial world, educated investors will find themselves better placed to make the right decision and to manage risks effectively. The informed decisions will in turn help ensure the efficient utilization of resources, boosting market efficiency, and developing the economy. I firmly believe that consumer education is indeed a national necessity and that we all must learn from each other and share our experiences in this regard. This is why we need to work together to promote consumer education not only domestically, but also internationally. In particular, it is my hope that the government, public regulators, and SROs should all work together to improve global financial education. This effort, I believe, will eventually help to bring a healthier and more mature sense of capitalism and enhance democracy through the world. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you so much, Chairman Wang. I think we will then move straight on to you, Gerard Lemus, if you could give us your presentation, please.
Thank you very much indeed, Chairman. My job is as chairman of the UK's Money Advice Service, as we now call it, and I see my job as helping people to manage their money better. Of course, education is helpful in that, but we've come to believe that education alone is not enough. What we've learned in the UK over the past 6 or 8 years, we spent 5 years in the UK working on a national strategy for financial capability, and it was a strategy started by our national financial services regulator, the UK Financial Services Authority, and it was inherited by the Consumer Financial Education Body when it was set up as an independent organisation at this time last year. We found two things from our experience. First, most people don't know very much about their money. I guess that's not a surprise to people here. And second, education on its own does not transform people's money habits. Particularly, it obviously does not transform the habits of those people who don't know very much about their money. Of course, people need information, but it also needs to be information which is timely and linked to the point of making a financial decision. Then we discovered a third thing. We tested giving people free money advice, face-to-face, over the phone, and online. And the multi-channel approach was very important. Leaflets and brochures were not enough. And what we found was that if you give people free advice, then the majority of people who receive that advice take action on it. So that's why I've spent the last 9 months since I became chairman changing an organization that certainly owned a financial capability strategy into an organization that is starting to deliver a money advice service. And that is a radical change. And as far as I'm aware, we're the first organization to come out of financial services regulation to take this step. So, 17 days ago, my organization stopped being the Consumer Financial Education Body and became the Money Advice Service. We launched as a new service on the 4th of April. And the Financial Times called us a new national wealth service and compared our launch to the launch of Britain's NHS in 1948. We're a free national service offering money advice to anyone and everyone. It's very important to us that we're a universal service, and we're not just for those in financial trouble, not just for people with complaints, and not just to help people in school education. We're not a substitute for regulation, but we think we can contribute, and as does the government and the FSA, we can help to create the right regulatory environment by contributing to correcting some of the obvious information asymmetries that we all know about. We're not trying to turn consumers into experts, but we're trying to fill a huge gap in the availability of money advice. Our estimate, our research, is that there are 19 million households in the UK that do not receive financial advice. Our money advisors cover everything, online, on the telephone and face-to-face, as I say, from welfare payments to buying bonds, with the emphasis on getting people to take control over their money and plan ahead more. Financial planning we see as a key strategy for prevention. From the consumer's point of view, they'll know that the advice they're getting is unbiased because we're not selling anything. We'll advise where appropriate on types of financial products or services, but we will not recommend specific brands or providers. We will not cross that regulatory boundary. What we will do is take people as far as we can up to the point of taking a decision, taking action, by providing them with easy links to the next steps. That might involve putting them in touch with the Association of Independent Financial Advisors or the Investment Management Association to seek regulated financial advice, or it might be by linking the advice they receive from our money advisors to our own product comparison tables on our website, whether that's for savings accounts or annuities or mortgages or unit trusts. From there, they can execute a purchase if they're satisfied they have the information they need. The center of this service is going to be focused on the customer. It's going to be an online money advisor, which we're calling the Health Check from the Money Advice Service. And we're launching this next month, and it will involve going through an interactive set of questions online with multiple choice options that should take no more than 10 minutes to complete. It's questions like, how far does your money stretch? How much do you rely on borrowing? Do you have savings and investments? And have you thought about how you'll manage when you retire? And so on. We've developed these questions with the help of the latest thinking in behavioral economics. The questions are intended to reveal insights into people's attitudes to money as well as their financial situation. And questions which, very importantly, help people to assess their attitudes to money and their circumstances against their aspirations, helping people to meet their aspirations through financial planning, I see as the centre of our purpose. At the end of completing the health check, the customer gets a personalised action plan with immediate priorities and long-term goals. They might be fairly basic, like use our budget planner, or they may be fairly sophisticated. For example, check your position in relation to inheritance tax. We'll be encouraging people to use the health check as a regular thing, not just as a one-off, and we'll be developing it as we learn more about people's behavior. And we're planning a version specifically for younger people between the ages of 16 and 25. By this time next year, our money advisors will have seen about 100,000 people, and we expect that about 500,000 people will have completed our health check. And so we will, through that means, have generated a huge amount of new business for the financial services sector. Our advice currently generates about 500,000 transactions of some sort in the financial services market, and we expect to encourage much more than that. We will also have a huge amount of market intelligence about what people want from the financial services industry and what they're feeling they get and what they feel they're getting and what they feel they don't want. And we should be seen, and I think all consumer financial education systems should be seen as part of an early warning system in the regulatory ecology. We will feed this intelligence back to the industry and to the UK financial services regulators, as well as to the policymakers in the UK government, which has actively supported and promoted our creation and our work. So, in conclusion, to come back to the original question, there are a variety of reasons why people need to make better choices with their money. It's good for the health of the financial services markets in the way I've described. Better informed consumers are more active and make better decisions. They promote competition and product innovation. It's good for the health of national economies, particularly now when state spending, at least in the UK and perhaps in some other places too, is under great pressure. And it's good for people's health and well-being in general. We've done a lot of research in my own organisation on the connection between health and well-being and feeling in control of your money. And it's very clear both that it does help and that people currently do not behave in ways in relation to their money that help to contribute to their sense of well-being. So we certainly do need better educated, but we also need better advised customers. And we need customers who take action based on good information. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Gerard. So we'll move straight on to you, Florian Macy.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm very pleased to be in this session focusing on financial education and consumer education. I have to say from the start that I am pretty much in favor of a consumer education, so it's not going to be an irritation, but rather a national priority and even more an international priority. In the few minutes that I have, I'd like to say a few words about why we think at the OECD and within the International Network on Financial Education. I'll explain a little bit more about this network in a few minutes, why we think this is an important component of the financial landscape, what we have done to address these issues, our main message in a nutshell, and some challenge ahead. First, I'd like to start by a quick definition of what is financial education or consumer education. Well, first, it's pretty much a capacity building process that involves awareness, attitudes like confidence or care, but also the skills in order to take effective action. And what is really important is that we are doing education, as just mentioned by Jack, not only because we want people to be better educated, but because we want them to take responsible action. And of course, the outcome is higher level of financial literacy or capability, and both terms are used to mean similar things at international level. Now, financial education has grown to become a priority for many of us, especially in the aftermath of the financial crisis. But I must say that when we started working on this issue at the OECD back in 2002, we had a lot of pushbacks from regulators, from the industry. So it's really the crisis that has created a kind of momentum for these issues. And now this is increasingly perceived as a critical skills in a changing equilibrium and a changing financial landscape. I would like only to take four reasons for the importance of financial education. The first one is, of course, the increasing transfer of risk to individual. Longevity risk, investment risk, health risk, and this means, of course, increasing responsibility for this individual. Second is a rather good news, that we have more consumers having access to financial products, of course, because we have financial inclusion initiative. And this is certainly a very good news, but we know also that these new consumers in the financial markets are more vulnerable because they are not knowledgeable about financial issues. We all know that the financial landscape is increasingly complex with increasingly complex products, with more providers, different providers, not necessarily regulated in the same way. And last but not least, we learned also from the financial crisis that prudential regulation is never enough. Never enough, of course, because the financial landscape is fast evolving. And we end up with a situation where there is a great asymmetry of information between producers and consumers. But at the same time, we know that decision of individuals, of consumers, in the area of finance is increasingly important, not only for them, but also for the overall society, financial markets, and the society. Nevertheless, when we look at survey, looking at the level of awareness, knowledge, understanding, skills, responsibility of consumers vis-a-vis financial issues, we see that in every country it's very low. And here the OECD and the network has done a lot of survey looking at national baseline survey that have been conducted, but also is doing a pilot exercise in order to measure this level of financial literacy. A couple of figures, I don't want to go into the details because I know we have limited time here, but just to show that in principle, even in the US, the level of financial knowledge is extremely low. Moreover, we know that the population, a large part of the population is even more vulnerable. These are young people, these are women, these are low-income groups. And more importantly, maybe, we know that most of the population is unable to plan ahead. And this is particularly an issue, of course, for long-term saving and pension. Now, as I said at the beginning, probably we are in a kind of momentum, a window of opportunity. Regulators, the industry, consumers are more interested in financial issues. They understand that financial education is a very important skills, and we should not lose this momentum and do something about it. Clearly, at national level, we see the development of many more national strategies on financial education. Again, we've done a stock take exercise to look at what was going on in countries and realize that more and more countries were actually building this national strategy. And most of the time, this is going hand in hand with the development of more appropriate financial consumer protection framework. This is also, of course, clearly mentioned through the G20 communique of last November and February this year. Now, what we think at the OECD is that, of course, financial education is important, but in order to be effective, it should be complemented with appropriate financial inclusion strategy, financial consumer protection framework, and of course, building on appropriate prudential regulation, governance framework, and competition. Just a few ideas about what we're doing. We started working on this issue in 2003. Because there was a concern of the limited level of financial literacy. We are building our work on three main pillars: the development of principles and good practices on financial education, this data collection on financial education worldwide, and the building up of an analytical framework, and last but not least, international dissemination and cooperation. Here are a few publications, starting with a journal one in 2005. If you're interested, I'll be pleased to send you this publication. A few sets of recommendations. We started again in 2005. We have recommendation to improve financial literacy at national level on private pension, on insurance, credit. And the last one coming this year on financial education at school.